This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
When we're awake and we're eating, there are processes happening in muscle, fat, liver, pancreas, and then all these things shift. The sun sets, we should switch into more of a sleep and fasting state. But the things that we do in our daily modern life disrupt this. Sleep deprivation, prolonged wakefulness, we're staying up late with the lights on, working, we're eating first thing in the morning and late into the night. We neglect our clocks. We don't really think about the fact that our metabolism would otherwise run on a very predictable schedule if it weren't for us doing shift work, traveling, undergoing time zone changes, eating late into the night. And we do see real metabolic consequences of these behaviors. So with all this in mind, let's go from caloric restriction to a lifestyle strategy that aligns with this 24-hour cycle of metabolism. So what I have depicted here is time-restricted eating. So 8 to 12 hours. If you put all of the calorie intake, exposure to foods within this 8 to 12 hour window, in this normal wake and feeding cycle, you are introducing food and calories to the body, to the organs, when they are optimized to metabolize that dietary intake. We're going to talk about primarily time-restricted eating because I've been fortunate to be involved in this work. And I think it is really the form of intermittent fasting that really best aligns with these circadian rhythms of metabolism that we're talking about. Something that does ultimately and really inadvertently result in caloric restriction, but isn't really based around that principle. It's really based around the principle of trying to get calories and dietary intake into the body during the right time in that 24-hour cycle, within that period where the body is really primed and ready to metabolize food. So this is an example of what we call a feedogram from one of our studies. And what we do is we have participants log everything they eat in a smartphone app. And you can see along the bottom of the figure, the time of day. You can see along the side, the days of the week. And every dot is a dietary intake event that the participant has logged in the smartphone app. So you can see in the beginning in panel A, one of our participants is eating fairly erratically early in the morning sometimes, maybe a little bit later on other days, late into the night, sometimes almost all the way to midnight, and creating an average of 14 hours over this monitoring period, during which on a daily basis, and that 14-hour period, that's when calorie intake is occurring. And when we ask participants in our studies to adopt a time-restricted eating window, we use a self-selected eating window where we have participants generally reduce that window of time to something around 8 or 10 hours during the day. And you can see here, this is a typical example where somebody has shifted their first morning calorie to occur later, and they've moved up the last calorie so that it's occurring earlier in the evening. And now, if you look at their average eating window over the course of this monitoring period, it's more like 10 hours. And they've created a prolonged period of overnight fasting that occurs every single day. So I'm sure you've seen some of the news about time-restricted eating, and this has been studied not only for potential weight loss benefits, but really for the potential to promote cardiometabolic health. And one of the things that all forms of intermittent fasting have in common is this idea of potential metabolic switch. So I talked about how in time-restricted eating in particular, we're trying to align dietary intake with the body's normal circadian rhythms of metabolism. But what also happens when you fast? The body switches its fuel source and importantly begins to use ketone bodies as a source of energy in multiple organs, as depicted here. And that leads to the use of ketones for ATP or energy production, and also has downstream effects that we think are favorable at a cellular level. Things like an increase in mitochondrial biogenesis, an increase in cellular autophagy, something that's needed to clean up and get rid of dead and dying cells in organs. There are studies to suggest that when we go into some form of safe ketosis, that there are these potential benefits related to that shift in energy source, that metabolic switch to the use of ketone bodies. So we think this happens in, as I mentioned, multiple forms of intermittent fasting. And while more research is needed in this area, it could be one of the things that could explain potential benefits to intermittent fasting that go beyond simple calorie restriction. And for time-restricted eating, another clue that there could be something going on that goes beyond simple calorie restriction is the fact that in animal studies of time-restricted eating, animals experience benefits from time-restricted eating even when we don't limit their calorie intake. In this example of studies from our collaborators at the Salk Institute, mice who were treated in a protocol that involved time-restricted feeding, during which their only access to calories or food was at night during their normal wake time, but they weren't allowed access through the rest of the day. Even when they were exposed to a high-fat diet, that's the FA, which is high-fat diet, allowed to eat all the time, access to food around the clock, versus FT, which is a high-fat diet in a time-restricted setting. You can see pretty dramatic effects just by the time restriction. And the important thing about a study like this in mice is that mice tend to eat a consistent amount of calories whenever they have access to food. So it's not just calorie restriction in the time-restricted mice here. There's something more going on when aligning dietary intake to a shorter window to the normal time during which mice are primed and ready to eat that protected them against weight gain in this study, even when exposed to the same high-fat diet as those mice who had access to those food sources around the clock. So now what we're working toward is to translate these results to humans, to our patients, to study participants in our clinical trials. In early work that we did in time-restricted eating in humans, we wanted to look at the potential for the benefits that I've mentioned that go beyond calorie restriction, that go beyond weight loss. And so we thought we should look at patients or individuals who have risk factors for cardiovascular disease and diabetes, those with cardiometabolic risk factors, specifically something called metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome is that combination of related risk factors for diabetes and heart disease, the high triglycerides, high blood pressure, increased waist circumference, high fasting blood sugar. If you have a combination of these things, you have metabolic syndrome. If you have three or more of those, you have metabolic syndrome. And we know that increases your risk of developing diabetes down the road and developing heart disease. So in this pilot study, we had 19 individuals with metabolic syndrome who importantly had a baseline eating window that was more than 14 hours per day, or at least 14 hours per day, as I showed you on that fetogram. And we asked these individuals undergoing this pilot study in time-restricted eating to reduce that window of time during which they were eating anything to a self-selected 10-hour window. And importantly, this was not breakfast skipping. This was, you know, continue to eat in a way that you normally would, but you need to select a more narrow window of time during which that will occur, a self-selected 10-hour window over a 3-month period. And you can see, if you look at the table, the baseline characteristics of this group of 19 individuals, elevated BMI of 33 kilograms per meter squared, elevated blood pressure at baseline. And you can look at in the next column for TRE, first of all, the reduction in their daily eating interval was significant from a baseline of 15 hours per day to around 10 to 11 hours per day, with reductions in weight, BMI, percent body fat, waist circumference, visceral fat rating, systolic blood pressure, and diastolic blood pressure. We were very excited about these results, that simply by asking these individuals with metabolic syndrome to choose a more narrow window of time and create a longer period of overnight fasting every day for 3 months, we saw not only weight loss, but the signal of multiple cardiometabolic benefits. We really want to figure out what's going on here. And so beyond some of the traditional markers of cardiometabolic health, like lipids, blood pressure, and anthropometric measures like body weight, BMI, and waist circumference, we're using tools like continuous glucose monitoring and wrist-worn actigraphy devices to get a very detailed picture day by day of what's happening when our participants undergo both a baseline monitoring period and then follow up through a time-restricted eating intervention. And as I mentioned, we use a smartphone app developed by our colleagues at the Salk Institute to have participants log or timestamp with photos everything that they eat when they're participating in one of our studies. So this is one example of the combined smartphone log, continuous glucose monitoring, and wrist-worn actigraphy from a participant in one of our trials. And you can follow in real time the way that something like glucose changes after a meal. And you can see after breakfast, there's a little bit of a spike. You can see the glucose really rises after that burger, fries, and a milkshake from In-N-Out. And we can really start to understand what's happening, not just comparing beginning versus end of trial values for things like hemoglobin A1C, but look at the day-to-day variability in things like glucose after a meal, to look at measures of activity and sleep using wrist-worn actigraphy, and put it all together to develop these very detailed pictures of what's happening with metabolism as somebody goes through a period of time-restricted eating. And maybe the greatest benefit to patients will be those who have the greatest dysmetabolism or problems with glucose or other cardiometabolic risk factors at baseline. This is just one example of the continuous glucose monitoring tracing for a participant with metabolic syndrome undergoing 3 months of time-restricted eating. And you can see the drop in their blood glucose during time-restricted eating in purple compared to the baseline glucose levels throughout a typical day. So we saw more dramatic changes like this in glucose through continuous glucose monitoring in those who had the most severe forms of baseline dysglycemia or forms of difficulty regulating glucose, forms of insulin resistance. And that led us to where we are now, both with performing a larger randomized control trial in individuals with metabolic syndrome, including elevated fasting glucose or hemoglobin A1C at baseline, and an ongoing randomized clinical trial that we're doing in individuals with type 2 diabetes. The TIMET trial was a large randomized study with 108 participants with metabolic syndrome completing a 3 month intervention of time-restricted eating versus a standard of care nutritional counseling. Now, everybody received the same nutritional counseling, but those randomized to the time-restricted eating intervention limited their daily eating window to an 8 to 10 hour window. Again, this was personalized, this was self-selected, and this represented at least a 4 hour reduction in their average daily eating window during the baseline period during which eligibility for the trial was established. And you can see our primary outcomes here were to really dig deep into those signals of improved glucose regulation that we observed in our pilot study. And you can see that at baseline for hemoglobin A1C, both groups were in this pre-diabetes range of A1C at around 5.8 to 5.9. We define pre-diabetes by A1C as 5.7 to 6.4. And if we can move the needle on hemoglobin A1C with any lifestyle intervention, we are moving people further away from progressing from metabolic syndrome into diabetes and thereby lowering their future risk of cardiovascular disease. So you can see, if you look at the top right-hand corner of the table, this between group change or percent change in hemoglobin A1C, the reduction in A1C of 0.1, that could potentially move somebody from that pre-diabetes category down into a normal range for A1C, or at least start moving them in that direction rather than seeing these individuals progress from metabolic syndrome into diabetes over time. And this was over 3 months. So we see some of these improvements over a shorter term intervention. We see them in comparison to a control group. And so our hypothesis is that if we were to continue with time-restricted eating over a longer period of time, that maybe these benefits would continue and we could really make an impact in managing some of these cardiometabolic risk factors in these high-risk patients with metabolic syndrome.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.